This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Good evening, and thank you for tuning in to Eco Radio. House Bill 1599, which opponents have dubbed the Dark Act, would prohibit states to implement their own food labeling laws. Activists visited Congressman Sam Graves' office last week with some questions. On tonight's program, we'll hear how that visit went. Also, Dr. Michael Hotz just got back from Washington, where he received the Presidential Innovation Award for Environmental Educators. He'll join us via phone to tell us about it. But first, I'm Naturally with your headline, environmental news. BrisbaneTimes.com.au reports, there has been an oil spill off the Great Barrier Reef. Oil has been located in the water south of Townsville. Queensland Transport has confirmed. Oil pollution teams were readied for work on Saturday. The oil was confirmed by water police and by a helicopter crew on Friday evening. Quote, a water police vessel out of Townsville, an emergency management Queensland helicopter, investigated and reported a sheen on the water and small oily patches about 1 meter in diameter, end quote, Queensland Transport said. The statement did not say over what size area the oil was dispersed. DemocracyNow.org reports, members of the San Carlos Apache tribe are fighting to preserve sacred sites in Arizona after lawmakers slipped a clause into the National Defense Authorization Act that would allow copper mining in the area. The land in question includes parts of Tonto National Forest, including Oak Flat and Devil's Canyon, and could also impact nearby Apache Leap, an important historic site where a group of Apache who were being pursued by U.S. cavalry plunged off a cliff to their deaths rather than be captured. Resolution Copper Mining, a subsidiary of British-Australian mining giant Rio Tinto, has long sought ownership of the land, but the battle is not over. Earlier this month, a group called the Apache Stronghold began a caravan from Tucson, Arizona to Washington, D.C. to call for this land to once again be protected. TheGuardian.com reports, climate change is what the world's population perceives as the top global threat, according to research conducted by the Pew Research Center, with countries in Latin America and Africa particularly concerned about the issue. It is followed by global economic instability and the Islamic State militant group. The survey, conducted in 40 countries and taking in the views of more than 45,000 respondents, attempts to measure perceptions of global threats. In 19 of the 40 countries polled, climate change was found to be the issue of highest concern. CRPE-EJ.org reports, a Kern County family is suing Governor Jerry Brown, claiming that California's new fracking regulations do not protect the health of Latino public school children. The lawsuit, filed by the Center on Race, Poverty, and the Environment, argues the new fracking regulations illegally discriminate against Latino public school children who are disproportionately affected by negative impacts of fracking in their neighborhoods. California's Government Code Section 11135 prohibits the state from intentional or unintentional discrimination on the basis of race. The suit, which names Governor Brown and California Oil and Gas Supervisor Steve Bolin as defendants, claims that the state is discriminating against Latino students by permitting wells in close proximity to schools they attend. And finally, I would like to welcome Mike to the mic. To discuss this special topic we have.
Yeah, thank you, Natural E. Before we get to our first topic of the evening, which is about the Dark Act, denying Americans the right to know, we heard that on the second half of the show, we're going to have Dr. Michael Hotz on, who just returned from Washington, D.C. to receive this presidential award. I had the opportunity to get a couple of quotes from folks at the Region 7 EPA office here in Lenexa, and here's first we're going to hear Chris Whitley, and then we're going to hear Rebecca Vogel Hightung, along with Rebecca Fenton. I'm sorry, I have that first name wrong. Hold on, we'll hear it.
Well, we're very proud that Dr. Michael Hotz, who has been a longtime teacher at Wyandotte High School in Kansas City, Kansas, is one of 28 recipients this year of the Presidential Innovation Award for Environmental Educators. This is an award program that the White House and EPA administer to recognize teachers who put innovation into their approach to environmental education, and they try to use the environment as a context for learning.
I have on the line Roberta Vogel-Lighting with the Environmental Protection Agency, Region 7, here in the Kansas City area. And Roberta has worked with Dr. Hoetz. And tell us about that.
Well, I started a relationship with Dr. Hoetz probably 18 years ago or so. And it was through another colleague that wanted to work with Find at high school and a couple of other schools, helping them to connect to water quality monitoring in the area. And at the time, we were just brainstorming some things with them and bringing the kids in their classroom out to some streams in Western Lyons County so they could experience firsthand how scientists were monitoring water quality. And that became like kind of a long-term relationship where over the years we've had events where we've been able to work together. And most recently that's been working with his students with Big 11 Lake, which is nearby their school at 13th and State Avenue, as their learning laboratory, and then Kill Creek out in Olathe as their comparison laboratory to that area. And the thing that I know about Mike is that he cares a lot about his students. He's almost like a peer to them. You could see how much they look up to him and trust him. And he's able to have a lot of patience with their, you know, hyperactivity and their inattention, and really get them focused on not only the science itself, but what it has to do with their lives. Connecting them to their own neighborhoods, doing projects where they actually go into the nearby neighborhoods and talk to people, share data, and also just create community partnerships where he works with lots of other organizations to make good things happen at the school and for the students.
Roberta, did you have something to do with Dr. Hoetz getting this award?
I didn't have a thing to do with it.
Well, how did he get on the president's radar?
This is Kathleen, Mike, yeah. And I'd like to defer you to our headquarters folks. They're the ones that ran the process of the nomination. But to just kind of quickly answer your question, and you can get much more detail from them, the applicants can apply for the award. There's a form to fill out, and then It was sent to headquarters with an evaluation and scoring. And other than that, you're going to have to talk to headquarters about all the details of the process and how he was nominated and selected.
Okay,
I can connect you with the headquarters program folks.
Okay, that's great. We can take that offline. That was Kathleen Fenton, also with the EPA. We heard here. Anything else we want to let our listeners know about Dr. Hoetz?
Well, one of the things that I've noticed about Mike is that he has never wavered in his commitment to teaching science to students and connecting them to his own communities. He's just been really, he's a guy who could have retired a long time ago, and he just hasn't done it because he loves his kids so much. And when I've worked with him and the students, you could really see that. You could see how much he cares about them and what they learn.
And he's been at this a long time.
Yeah, I think 30 years.
Wow. Well, that sounds great. We hope to connect with Dr. Hoetz in the near future and have him as a guest on, but we really appreciate you joining us today on Eco Radio KC and bringing us up to date on Dr. Hoetz.
Sure thing.
All right, I'm going to...
Thank you, Mike.
No, thank you. All right, back live here in the studio. That was recorded earlier today, and the piece by Chris Whitley was recorded on Friday. We're going to hear from Dr. Hoetz himself in the second half of the program, but right now we're going to talk about the DARK Act, House Bill 1599,
and it's that's not what proponents of the bill have dubbed it, but what opponents of the bill are calling it, denying Americans the right to know, an anti-food labeling bill. And Karan Tripp and Angela Cooper have joined us here in the studio. Angela paid a visit to Sam Graves' office late last week, and along with a couple of other folks. And Karan works with Organic Consumers Association and helped to facilitate some of that. Karan, I'm wondering if you could tell us about in a nutshell, what the DARC Act is.
H.R. 1599 is officially called the Safe and Accurate Food Labeling Act. It was sponsored by Mike Pompeo, a Republican congressman of Kansas, and it was the brainchild of the Grocery Manufacturers Association. It would make the already inadequate approval process for genetically engineered foods even worse. It would make voluntary labeling of GMO foods the national standard and strip away the consumer's right to know by blocking all state efforts to require labeling of GMO foods. That's why many people, opponents have called it the DARC Act, but in the past few months they have tightened up the loopholes and made it even stronger, and now it's being called the mother of all Monsanto Protection Acts. It would do things like, well, Vermont, Connecticut, and Maine have passed legislation that would require food labels. If DARC passes, that would be obliterated. They would be blocked. It would set up a system for getting GMOs approved by the FDA that's essentially the same as what we have now, which is nothing. It would basically enshrine that in law. The natural food label, which has never been adequately defined, would be defined presumably to include GMOs as a natural food. It's basically taking away our right to know, which is where the original title of DARC came from.
Right. So Congressman Cleaver is a co-sponsor of this.
That's correct.
And so is Congressman Graves.
Yes, yes.
And so, Angela, you and a couple of other folks visited Congressman Sam Graves' office last week, you being one of his constituents.
Yes.
And who was the person you spoke to?
I talked to Josh Hurlbert. He's a field representative and the only person after 3 weeks of trying to get a hold of Mr. Graves' office that was willing to talk to me. I sent a letter via the actual post office mail. I sent 4 emails with no response, and Karan helped me do a little social media push about how he would not respond to us. So he finally got a call back from them to set up an appointment after that social media push. I mean, only a day after the social media push, although I've been working real hard to get there. The problem with this is H.R. 1599 is a bill that is an amendment to an already broken system, and the USDA and the EPA recently approved their new herbicide-resistant GMO. And it absorbs glyphosate and 2,4-D, and 2,4-D is not so new. It's half the makeup of Agent Orange. And the 2,4-D is expected to increase by 30 times over the next 20 years. And there has been no safety testing on this. Just the fact that our American soldiers in Vietnam had died from Agent Orange, the 2,4-D exposure. This bill should not be called the Safe and Accurate Food Labeling Act of 2015 like they named it, because it's anything but safe or accurate. It actually strips our rights to know what's in our food, our right to know if it's safe, and our right to a choice. It single-handedly strips the states that have laws right now of those rights, and it strips the state representatives' rights to listen to their voters and what their voters want. And there is no expected time that the FDA is going to put a program together. So they're going to strip state rights away and say that you cannot make labeling laws, but they're not giving us an option for the federal government to make labeling laws, just that they can at some point.
And so when you visited the local office here, you had a couple of people with you. Who else was with you?
I met some people up there. I'm not really sure where they were what their affiliation was for. This was a public setting, and they were with the Organic Consumer Association.
Okay.
They're, OCA members.
Right, and so...
We sent out an email blast to all the members in the area in his constituency.
I gotcha, okay.
And so they came up to say what they felt as well. So I went into the... and to talk to him, and it was interesting to say the least. So do you want me to go over some questions?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you did a really good job. You gave us an advance. You kind of put it out like a script, and I thought it was going to find it well. So why don't you just go through it, if you don't mind?
Okay. I asked, my first question to him was, is Sam Graves' office for or against state having rights to determine how each state is ran? And he answered that the issue is when you have a network of their own states doing different labeling laws, it creates a logistical issue for whatever business it is. So 1599 lets the FDA decide nationally what GMOs get labeled and which ones don't. And then I asked who Sam Graves represented, and he said the constituents in the 6th Congressional District. And then I asked if Sam Graves had a history of co-sponsoring bills after the same type of corporations that the bill was made out of, and that they just gave him a donation. And his answer was, I have no clue, so I mean, we are, I have no clue. When you give somebody a $5,000 donation, and it would seem like that would take so much more than $5,000 to sell your soul, but he did it 3 days after... 3 days before he got the $5,000 thing, he then co-sponsored the bill 3 days later. So I asked if he had a history of doing that, and obviously his representative had no clue. I asked if Sam Graves had read the bill in its entirety, and my answer to that was, uh-huh. And I said, so yes, he had read the bill in its entirety, and he said, uh-huh, I printed it off yesterday. This kind of scares me, in the sense that this man has co-sponsored a bill and his assistant just told me that he had only printed it off yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a little frightening. Does Sam Graves have a history of co-sponsoring bills that strip state rights of state rights? And he said, well, that's a different issue. And so I said, did you know, or Mr. Graves know, that 2-4-D was half the makeup of Agent Orange? And he said, as for the specific chemistry, I have no idea. At this point, I stated that I felt like he should know what chemicals that they were allowing to put in our food supply if he was going to co-sponsor a bill. And he said that everything had to go through an APHIS process. Now, later in this conversation, I asked him what APHIS was, just to clarify things. And he said that it was an acronym, APHSIS. And in fact, we looked it up and that no such thing exists. However, there is something somewhat similar to that process, and Karen has more information on that.
Well, actually, I'm drawing a blank right now.
Okay.
What that acronym stands for.
He doesn't even have the information on hand to what is supposed to regulate this. So then I asked him what his particular stance was on 2-4-D, and he just kept insisting that it was a separate issue than the bill. I asked if Sam Graves was willing to talk to anyone about this issue before August, which was well after the vote. And he said that they have votes every day. He's in Washington and he can't be at two places in one time. I asked if I could have an email conversation with Mr. Graves and he said he might. I asked if he knew when the vote was going to be, and he said that he hadn't seen anything at this point, but Friday was when he'll get an update, and that he has seen some things for next week, maybe later. Now, in saying that, we have found out since then that the vote is this Thursday. It goes up on this Thursday, so I guess we have a more accurate answer now. The question was, this bill single-handedly strips state rights from the voters. 88% of the voters are in favor of labeling GMOs, 70% which are strongly in favor, and just 6% that are opposed to labeling. Why does Sam Graves not hear his voters? And his answer was, well, I mean, he works. I mean, we have 792,000 people in our district. I stated that 88% of them were in favor of labeling laws, and he said that he needed that polling data. I told him that he was more than welcome to look for himself, and he stated he nor Mr. Graves had seen one single poll on the issue. My response was that maybe he should do some research on what the voters wanted, because I have seen a lot of polls and I'm just an average Joe. He didn't really respond to that. I asked if Sam Graves represented we the people as opposed to the biotech companies, and he said that that was correct. I stated that this does not help one single person in Sam Graves' district outside of the money that was put in his pocket, only the biotech companies. Not one person in his district benefits from this. And I asked, why is Mr. Graves co-sponsoring a bill that is for biotech companies as opposed to representing the people that voted for him? And his answer was, this isn't about biotech companies. I said it was about a broken system, that they are making it easier for biotech corporations to take farmers' rights away from them. He responded that Mr. Graves was a sixth-generation farmer and that he grows genetically modified food. He then proceeded to tell me that hybridization and cross-pollination is the same as genetically modified. So I explained to him the differences between genetically modified food and hybridization. Unfortunately, Sam Graves' office only seems to think that GMOs are the exact same thing. And here's a direct quote from Josh Hurlbert. Sam Graves believes what he puts into the ground is going to be the best thing for his family. I responded that I figured that it was not GMO seeds that he was planting, and his response was, oh yes, it is. I asked the next question, did you know that food allergies are in an astronomical rise from 1996 to 2015? He answered yes. I asked, question, is Sam Graves in support of glyphosate, the cancer-causing chemical? Answer, he is in favor of Roundup Ready plants and glyphosate. Yes. He believes they are still, yes, if they've gone through the APHIS process and have been approved. The question was, in saying that, are you and Mr. Graves aware that the World Health Organization has labeled glyphosate as a possible carcinogenic? And the answer to that was, you're merging issues here. It's not the same thing. My response was that the World Health Organization had a little bit more medical background than Mr. Graves, and his response was, well, I'm sure they do. The next question. Three states have set up labeling requirements for GMOs, and this bill takes those state rights away from each state where it was voted on in the public. Why would you want to take laws away from anybody on a state level? His answer is because it doesn't affect the process of the plants have to go through to be approved to marketing. My question was, are you denying that this bill takes state rights away? Answer, I mean nothing. It does nothing with it. I mean, it doesn't take anything away. Question, so you are denying that it takes state rights away? Answer, it's not a state right because it falls under interstate commerce. He then stated that this would change the existing system. This bill puts the FDA in charge of and creates a possible nationwide stance. I asked if there was a time frame for that stance. He said no. Question, do you know that what the warning labels are on the bag of Roundup Ready soybeans? His answer was, I'm sure that you'll enlighten me. Question, did you know? Oh, and then I enlightened him, needless to say. I let him know what it said on Roundup Ready soils. It says on the bag that it's not intended for human or animal use, and it says so several times so it can legally cover their basis. And he said that it was the seed that has to have the label on. I said, did you know that the Roundup Ready soybean bag says that it's not intended for human or animal consumption? And his answer, I guess that the seed has to have this label, but once it's a plant, it's fine. I told him that you could eat any seed from my garden without fear of it causing cancer. However, the fact that Roundup Ready soybean bags have that, not meant for human or animal consumption, does that not terrify you? Answer, well, question, if you run the risk of getting cancer from eating the seeds from your food, does that not terrify you? Answer, do you know something else that is a known carcinogenic? Brix. I responded, well, you don't eat Brix. Brix didn't cause a rise in allergy ailments, GI problems, or cancer. None of these issues were caused from Brix. Question, your bill says that GMOs are safe. How can you prove this? That is an APHIS process. And still, mind you, he doesn't know what that process is. He doesn't even know what it stands for. I stated that the FDA stated that it was not their responsibility to prove the safety of genetically modified food. And biotech companies say that it's the FDA's job to make sure that the food is safe. He said, well, so my question, was the cancer-causing tobacco industry against labeling, and was it a fight? He said, yes, it took a lot of fighting. I said, was the label on the side of the cigarette pack from the Surgeon General easy to come by? His answer was no. I said, are you taking our rights away at the state level? And he said, no, because they were never your rights to begin with. And I said, will you give us in the state of Missouri the right to vote on this labeling issue? Answer, the problem with that is we're going to make this a federal issue, not a state issue. So the bill is outlining how the federal government is going to keep an easy system for all states. We talked at that point about how they were going to do that, and he didn't have any answers for that.
Wow.
So we went on, and I asked him, do you eat organic or genetically modified food, or do you know? And his answer was, you know, it's largely genetically modified because that's what's in the market. So question. You are right. That is all you get while going down the aisles in big box stores. Don't you buy from local farmer markets and support your local economy? Answer. You know, we will go and get a couple ears of corn. I mean, peaches and cream, sweet corn, from time to time. Question. So you yourself would rather give your money to corporations that produce GM food than your local farmers here in the state of Missouri? I'm a hefty fellow. I like to eat, was his response to that. Me. Okay, so the answer is yes. No answer, but a long pause, and there was a topic change, which he liked to do when he was uncomfortable in the situation. So I went right back to it, and I asked, the question was, I asked you if you ate organic and genetically modified foods. How about Mr. Graves? Do you know if he eats mostly organic or genetically modified? And his answer was mostly genetically modified. Question, so he doesn't support the local farmers either? Answer, well, mostly him and other farmers sell to elevators. I mean, they don't. He sells on a large scale, so he doesn't. Me, so the answer is no. He does not buy from local farmers. Okay, that's what I was wondering. There was a very long time with no talking at this point, so again I asked him, as a state representative, would you think that you would want the food that would grow the local economy? I mean, I would want to grow my local economy if I was the state representative. He said, well, yes. And I said, so then why doesn't he buy local? After yet another extremely long pause, he said, a majority of products, of his products, and him and his fellow farmers next that grew up next to him, they all do the seed elevators. And then there was another extremely long pause, and he said, so that is some local economy. Mr. Graves' office doesn't hear his voters. He doesn't want to hear his voters. He obviously grows GM food, so I mean, it's in his best interest to continue that route.
Wow, that's fascinating. That's almost, in some parts, sounds like a comedy skit.
It's unreal.
Yeah, unbelievable. So Karan, you had talked about an easy way for people to get in touch with their local representatives. Why don't you tell us about that?
Since the vote is Friday,
Thursday,
it goes to a full vote in the House of Representatives. There is still time, though, for you to make your voice heard, and I found a very easy way to call your local representative and let them know how you feel. It's a phone number that's been set up by the Oregon Right to Know. It's an 800 number, an 877 actually, which is 1-877-796-1949. You call that number, you give them your zip code. They'll give you about a 3-sentence description of what you might like to say, and then you're immediately connected to your representative's office. When I called, it took less than 5 minutes. They answered on the second ring, took down my information, recorded my preferences, and that was it. So there's no reason why everyone that really feels they don't want this to pass, that they want to have their right to labeling, they want to be able to know what's in their food, then this is an easy way to do it. It's 1-877-796-1949. And I also put some links up on my blog, which I'll put that on the Echo Radio website. Basically, it's myfoodfriend.net. Also, a very easy way for you to write letters to your local newspaper. It's already written. You enter your zip code again. It pulls up the papers. It's all very easy to do. There's really no excuse for not participating if you want to make your voice heard.
Well, folks, thank you so much for your diligence on this, and thank you for coming in and sharing this story. This has been, if it weren't so sad, it would be funny.
It's so sad. And people do need to let their voices be heard, for sure.
That's right. And remember, don't eat any bricks.
For sure.
We're going to be back with Dr. Hotz from Wyandotte High School after these messages.
Supporting 90.1 FM, there was a guy doing Woody Guthrie. He packed the house. The guy doing Sam Cooke stole the show. And the comedians in the submarine, well, you had to see it. And that was last year's Fringe Fest. This year's Kansas City Fringe Fest begins live performances on Thursday, July 16th and runs to Sunday, July 26th. There's even an art show in Union Station beginning July 12th. KCFringe.org has all the details. KCFringe.org.
If you like to laugh and love community radio, check out the KC Fringe Festival production, The Baby Boom Generation, The Greatest Story Overtold. This hilarious adult language sketch comedy pokes fun at hippies, LSD, the summer of love, 12-step programs, senior moments, and, well, senior incontinence. All proceeds from this Fool Killer Cross Currents production support KKFI 90.1 FM. Six performances beginning July 18th at the Musical Theater Heritage Crown Center, formerly known as Off Center Theater. Tickets $10. Details at kkfi.org.
All kinds of gay by the ocean, all kinds of straight by the ocean, all kinds of love by the ocean.
Supporting 90.1 FM, Mike Dillon, live at the Brick, Wednesday, July 22nd. Mike Dillon, at the Brick, 1727 McGee, Kansas City, Missouri, Wednesday, July 22nd. All info at the Brick KCMO.
Sandra Steingraber on Living Downstream on Making Contact Thursday afternoon at 12:30, right after Sprouts.
All right, we're back here in the studio. Before we go to Dr. Hotz, I do want to mention that there is a city council meeting going on right now till 8 o'clock tonight in Independence, Missouri, with regard to the ability, the effort to save the woods, destruction of 44 acres of wildlife. We covered this a couple weeks ago on Eco Radio KC. They're meeting from 6 to 8 tonight. This is the area they're looking to save is at 23rd and Blue Ridge. You'll have to look up when the city council, where City Hall is in Independence if you don't already know. Right now we're going to bring Dr. Hotz on the line. Dr. Hotz, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Great. Well, first of all, congratulations.
Well, thank you, and thanks for having me.
Sure. So, in case you're just tuning in, Dr. Hotz is a Wyandotte High School science teacher. He just got back from Washington, D.C., where he was awarded a Presidential Innovation Award for Environmental Educators. And if I'm reading this correctly, Dr. Hotz, you were one of 27 recipients of this award. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So, first of all, why don't you tell us how this came about?
Well, I'm an educator, and I've been, this will be starting my 31st year, and I've been 19 years in the Kansas City, Kansas School District. And I've been involved environmentally since the early 70s, so that tells you about what my age is. I've just continued to strive to do environmental things for my classes. And when you do projects, and you when you do environmental things, it takes money. And we all know what the money situation is with schools and so forth. So I'm always looking for ways that I can bring money into the classroom, and I can do these different projects that I wouldn't be able to do normally. So over the past 19 years, I probably have brought into the USD 500 school district about $150,000 in money to be able to use on these projects. So this was one that I saw, and it provides me with money for professional development, and also provides money for equipment and things to take into the classroom. So that was my motivation for doing that. And then you apply. The application is that you have to have been a teacher for more than 5 years, and you have to have some experience in the environmental field, and show them what you've done and what you're going to be doing, and then have a letter of support from an administrator, a letter of support from a colleague, and a letter of support from a student who is active or who has already graduated. So that's basically the process.
Wow. And things went pretty well. Were you... And how did you find out that you would be a recipient of this award?
I kept getting emails, and one of the emails was said that they needed more information on being able to get for me to be able to have White House clearance, and that was back in May. So I was thinking that I maybe was in the running for the award, being that they needed to get some White House clearances for me. So that was part of it. And then it was about the first week of June, I was notified that I was actually an award winner.
Oh, that's great. That's great. And so what was your visit to D.C. like? How did that go?
This was my first time to the D.C., and it's kind of like one of the things on my bucket list. And... So we went out a little bit earlier than, we went out on Tuesday and the award was given on Friday. And so when we got there, we learned the ins and outs about transportation and how to use the subways and so forth, and practiced on that. Went to the Smithsonian Museum of Natural American History.
Mm-hmm.
And were able to see the flag of the during the Battle of 1812, which took and motivated the writing of the Star-Spangled Banner. And I was not aware of that flag was as large as it was and that it was actually there and so forth. But it was kind of just awesome to see. That's one of the historical things that really impressed upon me, just seeing that and seeing how rich our history is. The next day we're able to take a tram and go around to the different museums, statues and things of that nature. So probably the most awesome was the Lincoln Memorial, to go and to see this magnificent monument and be able to experience that, and then to see and be reminded as what Abraham Lincoln had written as to his beliefs and his beliefs in keeping the country as one country, and being able to unify the country eventually. There's a plaque on the steps of where Dr. Martin Luther King gave his famous speech, and that was awesome to be able to stand in the same place that he had stood. So that was pretty awe-inspiring that way. On Thursday, we were able to, the EPA took us on tours. They took us to the White House, where we saw the east wing of the White House, which is a fabulous trip to be able to go there and see see the White House and the different rooms that are in the White House. And we actually even got to see the president's two dogs as they came through the crowd. We didn't get to see the president, but we got to see his dog. So that was kind of an interesting thing. So that was really interesting that way. And then from there, we went over to the Capitol, and we had a tour of the Capitol, and were able to see the magnificent architecture and the history of the Capitol, and to go from there. From there, we went to the Library of Congress and to see the awesome architecture there, too, and the structures there, and knowing that this is where there is so much information stored for all of us to be able to assess. And then on Friday, we were able to go back to the White House for the award ceremony, and had the award ceremony, had lunch, and then were set out on our own again. That evening, I stopped at the Arlington National Cemetery to see the unknown tomb of the unknown soldier, which is a really pretty awesome thing to see how many people have given up their lives for our freedoms. And then I went to the Washington Monument at night and got to see the Washington Monument and the Lincoln Memorial from a distance at night. Ate supper at a farmer's market in front of the Department of Agriculture, and had a veggie gyro, which was kind of interesting.
Well, it sounds like you had quite the trip, and you know, again, congratulations. So, as an award winner, you got a plaque as well, right?
Yes, a plaque that says that the acknowledgement by the President of the United States and the presidential seal for the merits of environmental education.
And it says that you would get up to $2,500 to further your professional development in environmental education, and that Wyandotte High School would also receive an award of up to $2,500 to fund environmental educational activities and programs at the school. Has it been determined how that money would be used, the money that the high school is receiving?
Well, I've always got projects going on with that. Right now, we've got a aquaponics pilot program that we're running, and we are growing tilapia. And the water from the tilapia goes and waters the plants, and then circulates, and the plants take the nutrients out of the from the waste of the tilapia, and then circulate it back. So we've got plants growing year round in that. And the pilot is to try to duplicate like cargo freights, and possibly have a self-sustained, environmentally friendly environment that would grow fish and vegetables year-round. Mm-hmm. And that could with the space and the pollution of land, that this keeps it from being polluted that way and from having poor nutrients in the plants, and also uses a least amount of water. So it's a pilot that we've been doing for 2 years, and we'll just continue to add on to that. We've also got a pollinator garden that we're using, so some of the funding will go into that. And then we've got a food garden that has 20 raised beds that we continue to add to that project. The other things will be used for technology to continue with some of the test equipment that we have as we monitor our heating and cooling and the lighting systems and so forth to try to cut down our environmental impact.
So is all this stuff on the grounds of the high school itself?
Yes, this is all going on at Wyandotte High School.
That's incredible. And your principal had some good things to say about you, saying that he believes that learning is a multidimensional experience that includes classroom work coupled with life experiences. And it sounds like that's exactly what you're doing. And she goes on to say, Dr. Hotz does not teach science. He guides his students on a journey of living the science they are learning. That's great. That's wonderful. Also, I don't know if you were tuned in earlier and got to hear some of the nice things some of the folks from the EPA said. My apologies to both Roberta and Kathleen for butchering their names earlier on, but they both had some wonderful things to say about you as well.
Yes, I was able to hear that, and I always blame Roberta for the fact that she was the one that kind of started all these projects and got us all going, just as she had mentioned that as we were brainstorming there, and then we just working through the different years that we've done. She just anytime I need help or anytime I need her to come and help out, she's right there, and the EPA is right there with them.
I mean that strikes me as I don't want to say unusual, but not your typical. I don't think of typical the high school EPA relationship like that. And so it sounds like you two in particular have cemented quite a relationship that's been very productive and beneficial for the community and for students as well.
Yeah, it really has, and you know the best thing about everything is just networking. You know, the more you network, the more you get your name out there, and the more you get your projects out there, the better it goes. Richard Mabian, who I know is co-host there, building the Building Sustainable Earth Communities, his conferences, we presented it at both of his, I think he had three conferences, and we presented at two of his conferences and had students present there also. But much of the time that conference was on was a matter of networking and getting all the different groups within the city that would do the same thing, and then learning who people are and so forth. But getting those groups together for collaboration has been a tremendous thing for me. So I blame him also for many of the projects that we're doing. And like he always says, he stirs the pot and tries to get the correct people together with what he's doing there. So I will blame him also for all of these things going on.
Yeah, he's quite the mixologist, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Yeah. Yeah, he likes to mix things up, and he does that here on the air, and you know, in all of his community work, brings people together that otherwise might not have been brought together, and you know, that's a powerful thing.
Yes, it is.
And I'm curious. So, when does school start?
We start, I think it's the 11th of, I start in, two weeks from today we'll be starting, the teacher will start, and then they'll start, the kids will start the week after that. So I think it's like the 11th of August somewhere.
Do you teach several grades, just one grade, or?
Yes, I teach 9 through 12. I'll be teaching physical science, biology, environmental science and botany this year,
and so is it likely that you'll have students this coming year that you've had in the past already?
Yes, it will. At Wyandotte, we've got like 8 small learning communities, and so we pretty much stay with 150 students that we start out with. We stay with the next 4 years, so most of my science students will be ones that I've had before. We always start off with a freshman, and that's where a lot of these projects started. 4 years ago, we had a project that basically a math teacher and an English teacher and I put it together, and that's when we started the Big 11 project.
And I just had a question there, and I lost it.
Sorry about that.
Oh no, that's okay. Oh yeah. So you mentioned earlier that one of the requirements for this award was a letter of referral from a student. Do you want to say anything about that student?
Yeah, she was a pretty special student. That she came in as a freshman, and she didn't. She was very, very shy. She seemed to be very, very shy. And through the 4 years I had her, she was one of my advocates, and I mentored her. She became very involved with the school and took on leadership places. And her testimony as to what I've done and how we worked together, helped with that award, and then she helped me get an engineering award earlier in the year also. So she has thought very highly of me, and I've thought very highly of her also.
Well, that's interesting. So you want to tell us about the engineering award?
This was a KU. I can't remember what what it was. Another innovative award for engineering. It was from KU, and part of the reason I got that, I think, was even though it was a KU award, I've been working with K-State with technology and sensors in the environmental area. So I will have a graduate student from K-State comes over to Wyandotte once a week and does innovative things with as far as the engineering field and sensors and environment and so forth, and they help bring those things. So I spent a week this year, a week at K-State at the first of the summer, learning more about sensors and programming and how to bring technology into the environmental arena.
I want to go back to what I read from your principal, Mary Stewart, about Dr. Hotz does not teach science. He guides his students on a journey of living the science they are learning, which I think is so powerful. But I want to contrast that with, like, a lot of teachers I talk to speak about the pressures of having to teach to the test. How do you elude that? It doesn't seem like... It seems you're managing to expand, get beyond that.
Well, with the number of years that this will be this beginning of my 31st year of teaching, I've always been able to look at the standards and then put the standards into projects and do hands-on project-based learning instead of strictly lecture straight out of the book and worksheets and this type of instruction. So what I try to do is I like to be outside. I like to do things with my hands. And I always tell my kids, I say, you know, what better occupation do you have where you get to go and get paid to play around with science all day long and do those things? So they enjoy doing that also. And you know, it used to be that the teacher was the one that got to do the playing around and doing all the work with their hands and so forth. But, now what I try to do is I get them, get their hands dirty, and I get their hands involved in things. And it means, you know, they're living it then. And instead of, I hope that it makes a big difference as to that'll stay with them, and especially in the environmental area, the importance of being able to take care of our environment and move on from here.
Dr. Hotz, I just want to congratulate you once again. It seems like you're doing amazing stuff there, and it's great to hear such positive stories like this. And also, it's great to hear how well you are appreciated by your students, by your principal, by the EPA, and by the President of the United States. That's pretty cool.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah. So congratulations once again. Any parting thoughts you want to share with us before we let you go for the calendar?
No, not really. There's, you know, the fact that if we do things together, and I think this is what I've tried to impart to my kids, is that, you know, if we do things together, we can accomplish a lot of things, and that's one of the mottos at our high school, is that we can do mighty things together. And individually we can do some things, but collectively we can do a lot of things. And I think that goes for our country, our city, our schools. We can do many, many good things.
Well, thank you. Thank you once again. Please keep in touch.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me on the program.
Okay, we've enjoyed it very much. And that was Dr. Hotz from Wyandotte High School. Just returning, I should say the award-winning Dr. Hotz, just returning from his trip to D.C. where he received a Presidential Innovation Award for Environmental Educators. And now we're going to turn it back to Natural E, who's going to give us our calendar of events.
Thank you, Mike. There's an Independent City Council meeting happening now. It started at 6 p.m. and lasts until 8 p.m. tonight. And they're discussing turning a wilderness area at the around the intersection of 23rd and Blue Ridge into a landfill. The Kansas City, Missouri Parks and Recreation Department is hosting a public open house event to view the trail design that will connect the Cliff Drive Scenic Byway to the Spirit of KC Scenic Byway. The meeting will be hosted by the Parks and Rec and their design consultant Trans Systems Corporation. And this event is from 4:30 to 7:30 p.m. Thursday, July 23rd, at Garrison Community Center, which is located at 1124 East 5th Street in Kansas City, Missouri. And for more information, please visit kcparks.org. And the City of Lawrence is hosting an educational classroom session to learn the basic knowledge to begin a composting project at your home, school, or community garden. Composting can help reduce food and lawn waste, as well as provide a nutrient-rich supplement for gardens. This free event will be held from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. Monday, July 27th, at the Solid Waste Annex North, which is at 320 Northeast Industrial Lane in Lawrence, Kansas. You can pre-enroll, as space is limited, by emailing recycling@lawrenceks.org. And be sure to check out our Eco Radio KC Facebook page for news updates and information on these events.